You're listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson, exploring humanity's greatest mystery, awakening through awareness. Hello, greetings. Welcome, Angus here, Season 2, Episode 9. And yes, the rumours are true. It is the final episode of this season. So I want to take this opportunity to thank, once again, my dear friend and best-selling author, Pete Russell, for all his generosity of spirit and his generosity with his time, sharing all the beautiful stories and insights that he has over these past 9 weeks, 9 episodes. So big thank you to Pete. And don't forget to check out his latest book, Letting Go of Nothing. It's on sale now with a foreword from Eckhart Tolle himself, no less. So check out the book. It's a phenomenal read, and I know you're just going to love it. So where are we headed now on this final podcast of the season? We're headed into The Power of Now. We're headed into stories about Eckhart and Pete's relationship with Eckhart. And we're heading into issues around human awakening. I'm going to say no more. Here's the conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so here we are again, Pete. Thanks for joining us.
Lovely to be back.
Do you think people have had enough of us yet?
I suspect so. So I think we should wrap it up quite soon. I think
Let's see how we do today. Well, look, today I've got a few things that are coming up on the radar, and I gave you the heads up of where roughly we're going. But I've got lots of questions around our friend Eckhart Tolle. Tolle. Do you say Tolle or Tolle? Which one do you go with?
Tolle.
Tolle, yeah, I say Tolle. Does he say Tolle these days? I've heard him say both.
maybe. I mean, it's German. To me, the German, the E is a Tolle in German.
Yes.
It's a German.
Yes.
Tolle would be Italian or something.
Yes, Tolle. Yes, exactly. So I've got a few questions.
Who knows? It doesn't matter.
And you know, I think a lot of people don't know that his first name is technically made up as well. His original name was, I should have looked this up, shouldn't I? But he wasn't an Eckhart. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yes, he chose the name from Meister Eckhart.
I had heard that.
Yeah. For next time, I'll find out that he was Bill or whatever it was. He was, Winfred or something. I don't know, Godfrey. But we'll find out what that is. But we've got some questions around Eckhart and, of course, The Power of Now, which many of the listeners to this podcast, almost all of them have read, because, frankly, everyone on the spiritual path seems to have brushed with it at some point. So, before we get into it, I've got a thank you to you, Pete. This is sprung on you. It was you in 2000 that switched me on to The Power of Now when I was just coming out of my dark years. I was 32-ish, somewhere around there. And I remember saying to you, on a long transatlantic call, I really need something to get into. And you said, you must read. Do you remember? You won't remember this. You don't remember it at all, do you?
I don't, but it's very plausible.
This was 2000. So I think the book had been out about 18 months-ish. Because you must have had an early copy or something. When did you first hear about
it? Right, I had a very early copy. A friend in LA I was visiting, and she handed me this book. She said, "This is amazing." And she's somebody who is, I really respect. I mean, she has been on spiritual inquiry, not just inquiry, but she has a really sane head about her, about, you know, she doesn't do with any woo-woo, mumbo-jumbo, but really, really
no-nonsense girl.
No-nonsense girl. And she said, "You must read this." And at this stage, he just self-published it. It wasn't published by regular. Right. He self-published it out of Vancouver. And I read it, and it's like, yes. Mm. And I think what it was that struck me was it's the part of the essential wisdom of all time. Be here now, be present, whatever it is, accepting the moment, written in a very down-to-earth way. I think that's why it caught on. And a little personal story there, I was so impressed by it, I actually wrote a little letter to him, a sort of endorsement, just a couple of paragraphs saying, you know, well done, why I like it, sent it off to his little publishing address in Vancouver. And meanwhile, you know, after the years he got famous, he appeared on Oprah, which of course boosted mm-hmm. him enormously, being on mm-hmm. Oprah. Everybody since then has dreamt of being on Oprah, me included. And then, so 4 or 5 years later, I was actually visiting a friend in Vancouver. Actually, it was my publicist. She lived in Vancouver. And she had a contact with Eckhart. I said, you know, would you like to meet him? And I said, oh, yeah. She said, I'll see if I can arrange that. And so she did. And I went to meet him in his nice little apartment. And I went in and he said, oh, you know, I'm so pleased to meet you, Peter. So pleased to meet you. And he said, two reasons. He said, you were the first person to recognize the book and endorse it for me.
Wow.
He said that was significant. He said, but also it came from you. And then he showed me his bookcase, a little bookcase on the mantelpiece, about, you know, 2 foot long of books. He said, these are the books I bought from England when I left England. And look, there's two of yours there. Wow. So that started off a mutual friendship, you know, because we both had a history of appreciating each other, which was really nice. Yeah.
I mean, I've always seen you two really as contemporaries. I really mean that. He did manage to distill something that, you know, it was just so punchy. But equally, you know, without blowing too much smoke up your skirt, Pete, your books are equally punchy to my mind. And all the ones that I've read, and I think I've read at least six of them, have been equally powerful. And could well have been a Power of Now phenomenon had they had Oprah behind them. So, you know, I found From Science to God incredibly transformative. It really shone a light on all sorts of things that I'd found very hard to articulate. Global Brain, I just couldn't put it down. I absolutely adored that. Which were the two books out of interest that he had on his shelf?
The White Hole in Time, mm-hmm. or Waking Up in Time, as it became known. And it must have been The Global Brain. From Science to God wasn't out. So I expect it was The Awakening Earth. It was published as The Awakening Earth in England.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then it became The Global Brain, did it?
It was a publisher's decision. I mean, my working title as I was writing it was The Global Brain.
Right.
But I didn't like the title particularly. And meanwhile, my US publisher, you know, was taking it on and working on it and editing it and things. And then talking to a friend came up with The Awakening Earth. Ah, that's what it's about, is The Awakening Earth. The Global Brain was like two, you know. Yeah, The Awakening Earth was really the spirit of it. And so I told my UK publishers, you know, I finally got the title Awakening Earth and Next Evolutionary Leap or something was the subtitle. And they said, great. And I told my US publisher, he said, no. He said, I think The Global Brain is much more marketable. He said, we're going to go with The Global Brain. So it was one of those things. And in hindsight, I would say never allow that to happen.
Really? Is that right? Yeah.
It just caused a lot of confusion.
Right.
I think, you know, in the English and American market, you know, people say, oh, I see you got another book out called, The Global Brain in England. No. So just as a word of advice is don't let that happen.
Yeah. So anyway. I hope you're enjoying this marketing podcast brought to you by angusfordrobinson.com. No, it's wise words. And I think that's probably true for, you know, if you give it two names, it is going to be bloody confusing. And as the general said, you know, when you're going into battle, never spread your Marmite too thin. You know, keep it pointed and focused and, you know, you'll win the battle. Just coming back to that first point we touched on. So I want to just take a few moments with you to really see, actually, what is it that made that book? Forget Oprah. Because actually, I think it would have still cut through the noise.
It
was already heading somewhere phenomenal.
It definitely was. Yeah.
And it's millions of copies sold now. I think it's 10 plus, 15 plus. I don't know what it is, but it's huge. Really, truly at the heart of it, what is it? It's not just that it's, or is it just that it's speaking perennial, spiritual, pared down wisdom? What is it? What do we really feel is has made that book stand out beyond so many others?
I think it's that, you know, it's partly the perennial wisdom thing, because, you know, it's Ram Dass, be here now, be present, you know, like it comes up again and again and again. And so people have heard it, you know, the present moment, it comes up always. And so the title, you know, was just brilliant, The Power of Now, The Power of Being Present. And then he just, he wrote it in such a way with little exercises, little sort of meditations on things. And I can remember sitting on the back of my boat when I was reading it, like reading, you know, just two or three paragraphs and looking out across the water and then just like, ah, and just being present. So it actually, it gave people the means to begin to put into practice in their life rather than just an intellectual understanding of it. And it actually came out of A Course in Miracles.
Is that right?
Yes.
Say more.
After he had his sort of awakening, his sudden awakening, and he didn't know what it was about for some time until a friend said, it sounds like you've had a Satori experience. He said, what's that? And then he started, he got into A Course in Miracles in England and became a teacher of A Course in Miracles. He was living, I think, near Glastonbury or in Glastonbury and teaching A Course in Miracles. And he was making lots of notes all the while he was teaching. And he had all those notes. And then he got this message to, this inclination to move to the west coast of America. And the first place he moved to was Sausalito. So we know he had that in common. And he started putting all these notes together he'd made from his teaching, putting all these notes together. And out of that came the book.
Right, right. Yes. God, I've got so many blooming questions now, but I'm going to try and keep on track. I want to just respond to my own question and say, yeah, I think all of that feels absolutely true. I'm also curious about this. I think paradoxically, and I hope he forgives me if he, should he ever hear that I've said this about him, and because he's made himself so invisible as the teacher, so egoless, so, you know, he's like a rice cake, you know, you eat it and nothing happens. It's sort of, he's just completely just invisible, and yet this extraordinary light and truth and love emanates from somewhere. And certainly the retreats that I did after, I should say this, after you told me to read the book, which I duly did and absolutely loved it, I then, actually, I don't know if you know this, but I then went and did numbers of retreats with him and just sat with him and did it, you know, Findhorn and in London and all sorts of places. Completely changed my life. Where was I going with this? I think part of his success is that he is just of the generation, that generation of teachers, he's so invisible in and of himself. There's nothing remarkable about him. And it's, you know, it's both a marketing nightmare and a marketing dream. You just can't pin anything on him. He is completely invisible. And yet all of this light is shining through. Yeah. Does that feel about right as well?
Yes, definitely, definitely. He's living it in a very unassuming way. Yeah.
He's done the Jesus thing of sit at the lowest point on the table. You know, total humility, just unassuming.
Yeah.
Zero stories. You'll never hear him criticize anything of others directly. He may allude to, you know, perhaps that isn't the best way to do it, but he's just completely, you know, you just can't, there's nothing to pin on him. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's just the teaching. He is the living teaching, isn't he?
Yeah.
So where does that take us? Well, I'm curious, and we've touched on this briefly once before, but just one last little question while we're on the Eckhart thing. Instant awakening versus, you know, the long and slow rocky path. famously, of course, Eckhart had this Satori moment and this almost brutal awakening, but very beautiful awakening, versus, you know, the slow... gentle evolution. Say some things on that, Pete. Tell us what that brings up for you.
Well, I mean, there are the instant awakening happens. You know, there's many stories throughout history of people who just suddenly they had the flash, they got it, the ego completely dropped out, whatever, and they were sitting in that reality of just being and suddenly appreciating, my God, here's the peace, joy, love I've always been looking for, the whole world looks different, and it stayed. Then that's the much rarer thing that happens, I think. We'd all love that. You know, maybe I'll be blessed with seeing, I've seen the light. Mm-hmm. For most of us, it's what's called the progressive path. And where there's two things happen on the progressive path, I think. Well, just talking for myself, there's the seeing through things, you know, step by step by step. You know, we've talked about ego in the past and things like, that's my ego mind. That's how it grabs me. That's how I'm beginning to see it. I'm beginning to be able to step back from it. When I get caught up in something, beginning to say, okay, I'm beginning, you know, through practicing meditation, beginning to come back and get more familiar with that quality of being, etc. So it's a progressive path in terms of we're peeling away the layers of the onion. Gradually getting more and more acquainted, better practiced, and so it's progressive. And within that progressive path, there are moments of awakening.
Yeah.
It's like there's moments where, you know, I'll be, mainly a lot of them come from meditation retreats, but also other times where everything just drops out and it's like, of course. This is what they've been talking about. All those words I've read, you know, from the Upanishads through to Eckhart Tolle. It all makes sense. But it doesn't stay. Mm. And I link it back into the world and my stuff comes up. My ego mind starts planning something or even like, I must write about this.
Yes. Yeah.
Whatever it is, I drop back into the world. But that taste is there. And that taste, you have more, well, I have, you know, more and more tastes. And what I find fascinating is, of all the experiences in my life, and I've had a lot, most of them I can't remember. Oh, yes, I can remember going to that Pink Floyd concert. What can I remember about it? Oh, I remember
remember the hot chick in the third row.
Right. But those tastes, are so clear. I can remember, and it's paradoxical because there's nothing to them. It's just like that peace, the joy, whatever. It's not like, and I realized this and I saw that and blah 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 and I got in touch with the angel. No, there's nothing to it. There's no substance to the experience, and yet although there's no substance, it's the clearest memory I have of those tastes. Even going back when I dropped into as a teenager, I have a very, very clear experience when I didn't know what I was doing of that. And I think that's because it's not another experience of something that can come and go. It's being in touch with something that's always there. And so that memory is resonating with something that's there within me. I'm not going to find some experience I had in the past, just resonating with, yes, that's there. Yeah. So
beautifully put.
What's it for you?
Beautifully put. I'm just digesting everything you just said there. It's gosh, I've got so much that I want to express now. You've really sparked a lot of things. For me, it's both, actually. I mean, it's curious, actually. You and I have had a friendship for over two decades, but I don't think it's ever really come up that. Well, I have mentioned it probably in passing, but my 20s were extreme, extreme suffering and a very difficult childhood. I did have, at 33, that cliff edge moment of dropping into silence, and it did last for some considerable period of time. And a lot of my closest kin thought that I was on drugs. They would find me sat, you know, I remember one occasion I was at a visiting a friend, and after this sort of drop-off moment had happened, and my brain, for the first time in a decade, was completely empty. And I was moving around town, and it was just, nothing was bothering me. It was utterly blissful, and I often used to just cry with joy, having had the best part of 10 years of antidepressant pills and doctors saying you'll be on meds for the rest of your life, and, you know, horrendous hurricanes of anxiety with moments of suicidal depression. And then to drop into the silence was just unbelievable. Yeah, there was occasions where I'd be waiting for a friend and, you know, they were delayed and I was waiting in the garden, just sat on the ground for an hour, and they'd come, I'm so sorry, expecting me to be upset. I was like, you could have been 3 hours. I just don't mind. It was like bliss. But of course, then I resonate with the other part of your story. It doesn't last, and life catches up and your mind can start again. And yeah, the last 22 years, of course, there have been moments when the mind gets totally fired up. But the thing is, for me, I know the off button.
Yes.
Yeah. And every time that I feel the needle heading into the red zone and it getting a bit shaky, thankfully now, because of that experience that you've just talked about, I know how to drop the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I have not been... And I can say this hand on heart, I have not had any overwhelming anxiety or depression for 22 years, nor been a drinker or drug taker or anything else to ameliorate feelings. It's just that I now know how to switch off the mind. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's a... knowing that is a motivation or an inspiration to... continue on the path, because you know what is possible. Yeah.
Yes.
And also, I mean, just coming right back where we started, you know, I often say to people, it's not about staying present.
Right.
It's about learning how to...
Say more on this, Pete. This is great.
Well, there's nothing more to say. I just say, you know, people think, oh, I can't stay present. I was present. I can't stay present. It's not about staying present. It's about learning how to return to the present, you know, which is your button, how to switch off the thoughts and just drop in. Yeah. It's like each of us learning how we can easily, most efficiently, most delightfully come back to being here now.
Absolutely. And that raises the question, let me rephrase that. Pete, is that available to everyone?
I would like to say yes. There may be people whose, let's just put it, mental nature is so, what if we use the word tortuous, that it is not available. So I don't want to say it's available to everyone. I think in principle to any, I don't want to use the word normal.
Yeah. No, I know where you're heading.
Normal in the sense, the true sense of the average person.
Yes.
Yeah, in that sense, the normal, but the average person, yes. Because go on.
I want to see if I can put this into other words, which may help you, because I can see you like all, you know, we're all struggling for the right words. Would it be true to say, Pete, that we all have the potential to find that still place?
Yeah.
I see it more that it's more about, it's part grace and it's part readiness and it's part willingness, actually, or conditions. It's a confluence of all these factors.
Yeah.
But I genuinely feel, and certainly what's behind my impetus for teaching, is that the greater part of humanity is completely capable of finding this stillness, this off button.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. And again, if we're talking about words, I would rephrase it slightly differently. Mm-hmm. It's not finding the stillness. It's about removing the veils to its presence, because mm-hmm. it's the activity of the thinking mind and all we get into and our worries and all that stuff that fills our day-to-day experience is hiding the stillness. And so, you know, simple analogy, if you're in a room and you've got the radio playing out loud, you know, and everything going, dogs barking, you know, you turn the radio down, you tell the dog to shut up, and then you notice the sound of the refrigerator and you turn that off. The stillness is there, but it's being masked. And I think it's the same with the mind. So it's not so much a question, it's not finding the stillness, but finding the way to turn off what's in the way. And so that's why, you know, for me, the first step always is just when I notice I'm caught in some thought, just choosing to pause that thought, to not follow it for the moment. And in that, when you just pause a thought, there's a little taste of, this feels a little easier. It's a little quieter in my mind. It's not full-blown stillness, but it's just that little thing. And I think we can learn how to, you know, turn off those things that are masking the stillness step by step by step.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. There's two last points, and I promise to let you go.
No. I don't want you to let me go. I'm enjoying. No, I always enjoy chatting with you.
No, I know. I'm actually just thinking of our dear listeners who, they can always find the off button if they want, can't they?
Hey, right. You probably lost half of more.
Let's do another. Let's do another 2 hours, Pete. Let's keep going. I'll get the wine open. No, two last points. God, you see, now I've lost my bloody train of thought. Where was I going with this? I know we both hate the word, hate strong. We're not fans of the word enlightenment. But if we go with that as a word pointing to living a life with great presence, just that general, then I always find it important to remind students that this mythical search for enlightenment is really that once we've had the taste of stillness, let's just call it that, then we're looking to find more and more pauses, more and more stillness. It's not that we're trying to, as you rightly pointed out 10 minutes ago, we're not trying to find this sort of monotone, I am enlightened and this, I never have any more desires and I'll never be anxious again, I'll never feel jealous. And not at all. It's that we've got this foundation. I see it as a foundation for living, a place to abide, to come home to regularly, to come back to peace and stillness before heading off out into the world again. And does that sort of chime with your take?
Absolutely. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. No, and as a final point, you know, since we sort of started on dear Eckhart, I was really intrigued, you know, to hear him speak quite recently, actually, about his frustration. Interestingly, you know, this really paints him now as a very human and, again, probably increasingly lovable human being, which he is. When he was in his Glastonbury phase and he was sort of teaching three folk and a dog on a Wednesday night, you know, he found himself becoming quite frustrated. And he said he was sort of praying to God, you know, how can I be of more service? How can I reach more people? And he really yearned for that. And I heard him speak about this and I found myself, wow, that's so beautiful and human to hear that even after his very profound awakening, there's still desire. He's still got desire to reach out and connect and to express. And it's such a bloody beautiful reminder that's not a bad thing. That's a beautiful thing. It's like a flower wanting to share its essence and scent to as many people as possible. It's fantastic. So I just share that because I do think sometimes we're in danger. I know I have been of, deifying certain teachers and like, well, they don't have desires and they don't have nonsense, you know.
Absolute nonsense. We're going to continue this, but just, I don't like the word enlightened. Awakening I prefer is more of a better pointer. It's still got limitations, but it's not about not having desires or feelings anymore. It's about not being submerged by them, not being overtaken by them. Of course, you have desires and feelings and wants, but you know, my understanding is you don't lose that connection with presence, with being. That is there, and you see the desire arising. And if it's a valuable desire, like with his, with frustration, you see the frustration, and you take what you see as the best calling that frustration has, which for him was prayer, and maybe that's what led him to decide to move to the West Coast, and who knows.
Yeah.
But yes, just to make that point, yes, I can remember, you know, I spent a lot of time in my early days with the Maharishi, TM fame. I saw him get angry. He got angry at me once.
Did he?
My God.
Oh, what did you do?
I hadn't done what he said.
Right.
He said, what is the point of me telling you to do this and you don't do it? Da-da-da-da-da-da. God, did it hit me hard.
Really? And he was properly in the anger. He was feeling angry.
He was expressing it, yes. But, I, you know, I trust, you know, that was what was happening. But his, that doesn't mean to say that anger overshadowed his being. Inside, he was thinking, that stupid guy, Russell, what, blah, 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 blah. He was just like expressing something that came up.
Yeah. Very human, beautifully human. I mean, of course, that will lead into other conversations at some point of boundaries and all the ethics that come up, because of course, as we both know, almost every guru of yesteryear has now been defrocked and dethroned and everything.
Demystified,
definitely that. So maybe at a later stage that will come up. Let's leave it for there. Leave it there for now, Pete. Thanks again so much for your thoughts and reflections on that, and we'll speak again very soon.
Yeah, good.
So that concludes our final episode with Pete Russell. My thanks to Pete, and my thanks to you guys for listening. Please do keep your messages coming. It is so lovely to hear what it is that you're enjoying, what you're learning, receiving your questions and more. So do stay in touch. There'll be a short break now for, I don't know how many weeks it'll be, but a short break while we find some more material that we want to cover. And then we hope to see you again for a new season very soon. For now, big hugs and wishing you well. You've been listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson. To join my Awaken program, please visit angusfordrobertson.com.